You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
Describe the relationship between quantum computing and AI, because I think quantum computing is a concept nobody understands, including me.
Well, quantum computing basically changes the roots of computing as we know it, so that it's not based on a physical bit that's either one or zero, but that it can be essentially dynamic, so that it uses the actual physical properties of the materials that's used to build the quantum computing that allows for uncertainty and also rapidly searching the space of uncertainty. So as applied to AI, rather than searching a arbitrary tree, possible acts, let's say you're building a game player on the possible actions, action A or versus B, a quantum computer can hold all the options as possible and simultaneously pursue them and essentially turn what's called an NP complete problems into polynomial time, so that rapid optimization becomes possible, and that could change the way that future AI algorithms are built.
Yeah, so the problem with a game playing computer is that it searches this huge tree of trillions of nodes, but a quantum computer could, like you say, solve an NP complete problem, could solve a one with 1,000 digits after it, number of nodes, rather than building a tree. It could just look at all of this instantly. And that's going to change the nature of cryptography, cryptocurrency, AI, plus perhaps our own ability to decide what AI is good for us or not. Maybe the AI starts making decisions about what's good for us. Like in the case of education, you could say, no, I'm not teaching this kid anymore. It's too much.
Yeah. So there are many things the quantum computers can do. It's almost like computer science being rebuilt from the ground up. So we don't really know what applications will be revolutionary. So in the story, I described the one application a lot of people talked about, which is basically breaking in to Bitcoin wallets, which is well known to be doable as a way to trigger the other activities in the story. But you're very right. That is a possibility where, if singularity were possible, if unimaginable brilliant superintelligence were possible, that's something that could be triggered from quantum computing. We don't know whether that's the case or not, and it's likely to be more than 20 years away. So in the story that projects kind of 20-year vision, I didn't projected that far for superintelligence or singularity to happen, but that's certainly the if singularity and superintelligence were to happen, most likely would come from quantum technologies.
But how far away? Like a lot of these stories, I feel are almost doable right now with the right push. Quantum computing, we're still in the early stages of. Where do you see that in the time frame?
Yeah, I'm also not an expert in quantum technologies, so I researched a lot of experts' views. I think the experts' view generally point towards 10 to 20 years to build something like a 4,000 logical qubit quantum computer that is stable enough to be run. And on that computer, breaking Bitcoin wallets is one application or I think if we put it more positively, revolutionizing cryptography would be one of the first applications. And then there could be many more. So it's at least not within 10 years and probably not over 20 years as a starting point. And 4,000 qubits is just like, you know, when you and I learned programming, you know, it was a very slow computer. And that could grow by, you know, millions of times over the next century.
You know, a lot of people think that, you talk about the singularity and people ask the question, are computers going to become quote unquote intelligent? Why is that an important question? Because I feel like we don't expect animals to become intelligent like humans. You know, why isn't it enough simply that, let's just take the example in the first story, the AI insurance is better at it than a human in that specialized environment?
Yeah, I think it's a human habit, being the supreme animal that inhabits Earth, that we compare everything to us. You can think of it as a narcissistic tendency. Yeah. That's why, you know, in every alien movie or in every, you know, super smart animal movie or every robot movie, it always somehow gains the toughest human innate capability, which is our sentience, our self-awareness, and our desires and emotion. But I think that currently, at least in the next 20 years, is not the most important question, because the AI that will develop in the next 20 years is not similar to the human brain. It will do many, many things and many more things much, much better than humans and cause new problems that we need to be aware of. And among those problems, being like human and having our desire and greed and fear and is not one of them, because these are, after all, just algorithms that become super smart and that cause issues like externalities that are in the book. And the AI does not become human-like. So if you look at sort of the space of all possible things that AI can do, it will grow and grow. And there is another circle that's human capabilities. And more of the human capabilities will be better done by AI. That's a scary thing. I think the challenge upon us as mankind is whether we can grow that human circle in some other dimension, whether it is creativity or passion or our individuality or our emotions and love. And those are possible room for us to grow in ways that we are uniquely good, in ways that AI is not so good.
Well, what do you think that humans are uniquely good at that a very specialized AI would not be good at? Because you mentioned creativity in the book, and there are many examples now of computers composing things that may be indistinguishable from a Mozart piece.
Right. And we have to ever modify these descriptions of creativity, right? Used to be computers could not do anything creative. Now I think we would say that, AI can emulate Mozart or Picasso, but it cannot create a new Mozart or new Picasso, a new style of art, a new style of expression, and done in a way that's expressive, appeals to our emotion, and gets us excited. And AI cannot create yet a new, you know, AI algorithm, the next deep learning. So I think we're basically at a stage when emulated creativity is now better done by AI. AI can make, you know, your family photo a Picasso style or a Monet style better than artists, better, faster, and cheaper than artists. But it cannot create a new style. So I think we're elevating creativity to a new level. And similarly, you know, AI cannot do the complex thinking of a CEO or an M&A expert. And similarly, AI cannot create feelings of connectivity, trust, and human-to-human connection. So
that I argue with. That I dispute.
Yeah?
Because I can feed in your conversations for the next 5 years into an AI. And then when I want to talk to my virtual friend, Kai-Fu Lee, I might not be able to tell between the real Kai-Fu Lee and the one that's listened to your conversations for 5 years and has and has also tracked your brain patterns and then, you know, figured out which conversations to label as good, which ones to label as not so good. And it could create a very good version of you that I might not be able to detect for a long time.
I do think that is possible, but I would, devil's advocate, give you a couple of reasons why that's farther away. One is that such an algorithm needs only one mistake to lose all the trust, because human mistakes are predictable. So if I say something a little bit silly, but sort of human-like, you would accept it, right? If I said quantum computing can be done, I think, in 5 years. Now, you might say, hey, that's a stupid thing to say, but okay, that's human-like. If I suddenly say, you know, quantum computing is like McDonald's, very yummy, you say, wow, how stupid is that? But when you look at GPT-3, sometimes it does something really stupid. So I think our ability to remain trusting that an entity is human-like requires not making horrible mistakes using our human common sense. That, I think, you need to get to a very high degree of confidence, right? 99.999%, which is ever difficult to get. So that's issue number one. The second issue is, as a chatbot, possibly that level of Turing test, even in an hour, could trick you in 10 years. That is Kai-Fu even in 10 years. But if you want to create a real human connection, right? People still say that we cannot create a true connection in a chat room, and maybe not even over Zoom, and that face-to-face in-person contact is needed. And the ability to create an in-person robot that you can't tell is me, that passes that level of Turing test, I would also argue is more than 20 years. So those are the two reasons.
How would you measure that? How would you measure success in a task like that?
Well, I think we could have a Turing test that is more challenging than today to really find a picky smart person like you, who could in an hour talk to someone you really know, like Kai-Fu, and in an hour you couldn't tell whether it's me or not. That could be kind of Turing test 2.0. Turing test 3.0 could be that done, but in a face-to-face context. And I would argue phase one would be at least 10 years, maybe longer. Phase two would probably be more than 30 years, because there are many parts of robotics, motor skills, et cetera, that are yet difficult to emulate. But then I come back and question again, you know, we're falling in the trap of using AI to emulate humans again, right? That capability that you just described would be more commercially viable. I mean, if I were a startup, I would not be building a Kai-Fu emulator. I would be building a targeted advertising engine, right? You kind of hinted at that earlier, that watches everything that you look at and then figures out how I would sell a Tesla to you, how I would sell the next iPhone to you, how I would sell the next Netflix subscription to you based on the last 5 years of conversation that you've had. A targeted advertising engine is commercially much more viable and valuable. And if that made a mistake, it's no big deal. It's not like a Turing test, but also that creates a lot of scary things, because now you've got a super smart Cambridge Analytica engine that is trying to wash our brains and convince us to buy things with ever more powerful capabilities compared to Google AdWords.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb, because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests and having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ziprecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
There's all these things that change based on small changes in your behavior. So there's ads. You, of course, mentioned insurance. There's things like credit score, which is a form of insurance. You know, there's various you know, there's, of course, the whole Minority Report type scenario where how dangerous is someone before they become dangerous? And, you know, a lot of this stuff is not, you know, rocket science in the sense that I remember in, I think it was 1988, a young man by the name of Kai-Fu Lee created the World Champion Othello program using technology very similar to what's used in this insurance program. You basically had every position was defined as a vector of features, and some vectors led to winning games, some vectors led to losing games, and you would then statistically match a brand new vector, a new Othello position, and determine what's the odds that this is a winning position or a losing position. This is the deep learning you describe in many of these chapters. And this was, you did it in 1988.
Yeah, except it was with shallow learning, I guess. It was a one-shot Bayesian learning. But yes, you're probably one of the 10 people who still remember my work on that. Thank you.
What is the difference between that and, I mean, in deep learning, I guess part of it is the system is learning the features that are important for these vectors.
Well, yeah, so you can put an arbitrary number of features in deep learning. You can train it with incredible depth that makes the discrimination function much more complex. You can target it on each individual based on to individualize. So despite all my desire to get some credit, I really think deep learning is a million times more powerful than the papers I wrote in the 80s.
And so what's next? Which of these are you actively looking at as an investor now? Like, what areas are you exploring in AI?
Well, I believe natural language is the next breakthrough, and I think you share that belief. And the rational justification for that is back in about 2014 was when AI algorithms beat people in computer vision tasks, namely that of object recognition. And essentially last year was the year where AI beat human capability in natural language task, namely reading comprehension. And I think once AI beats human, that in a pretty hard, although domain-specific tasks, that means it can be applied to all kinds of applications. So that's why after 2014, AI has been applied to all kinds, computer vision has been applied to all kinds of tasks, like automated stores, autonomous driving, image recognition, smart, and also deepfake and face recognition, and many, many things that are built from the vision algorithm. So now I think the natural language algorithms, people use GPT-3 as the top example, but I would actually more generalize say it's based on the Google Transformer idea of learning context. Essentially, the new natural language breakthrough is in order to understand language, we have to look back at not the last three words or 30 words, but a million words that we have spoken, and intelligently use AI to associate the most relevant concepts selectively based on the last million words that we've spoken in order to predict what we might say or what we might do. And that fundamental capability, I think, can power the next generation advertising engine, the next generation engine in machine translation, in question answering, in super smart search, where we ask a question and get one answer. To validate that, I'll give a free ad to Google now. One of my most amazed technology that shocked me was over the last few years, Google search now has an uncanny ability to answer questions. So most people don't try it because we're used to entering a sequence of text and looking at web pages. But try asking Google a question. It is infinitely better than it was 3 or 4 years ago, precisely because of this technology. It's not perfect, it makes some mistakes, but it's amazing how it can pinpoint one answer. So sort of fulfilling Larry Page's vision. I remember when I joined Google, Larry was famous for saying the right search engine is not entering a bunch of text and get a bunch of web pages. It's answering one question and getting just one answer out. And now I would say probably in 70, 80% of the time, Google can do that for me. And of course, you know, this will continue to advance. And I think that is the basis on which we will see a lot of progress based on the ability to understand language. And after all, our language, you know, English, Chinese, what have you, is the basis on which our intelligence is judged, is the unit in which we think of thoughts, is the way in which we communicate with people. So that, I think, ought to have a much bigger impact than computer vision even.
Hmm. And, you know, it's interesting because I think when AI first tackles a problem, it uses this very brute force, you know, it understands basic knowledge of the domain and then uses brute force to determine what are good decisions and bad decisions. But then as AI has become, you know, deeper learning, it almost outhumans the human. So with computer vision is a good example where brute force was good enough for it to identify an apple versus not an apple. But really now, you know, with deep learning applied, you could see, you know, apples, very obscure images in complicated photos. Or you could even start saying, oh, this apple looks like it tastes good. Like it actually can start to figure out what other properties of the apple other than just that it's an apple.
Yes. And it can make, you know, an animated apple that makes you smile. It can start to do things like that. So I think the ability to synthesize, to create things, I think is another direction. So I think, you know, today people get hooked to TikTok or Snapchat because these are videos created by people considered by AI to be attractive to us individually. But I think a future will be where these videos are created from nothing and constructed using understanding of our beliefs and likes with language, but synthesized with its understanding of images and video. So these content and video will be targeting specifically for you.
But here's where it might get insidious though, is that like TikTok's a great example where it uses AI and the algorithm to determine what videos you might like. And so what ends up happening is it's almost like you reach a local hill and not the maximum hill you could reach, because it's once it realizes that you're satisfied, it starts showing you these videos. But that could, the danger is leading us down these echo chambers of just people while I'm looking at videos just for people like me. And maybe the AI hasn't really reached this next level where something that I didn't know would be good for me, it will start showing me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why in the story, I talked about the limitations of AI is really that we train it on simple tasks, like the number of minutes we stay on TikTok or the amount of money we buy from Amazon, rather than things that are good for us. So if there is a way in the future of measuring whether we've grown as individuals, we've become smarter, we've become more thoughtful, we've become happier, wiser as a result of watching the series of videos that are being shown to us. Once that algorithm can come out, then we will have aligned our interests with the company's interests. And arguably, that's good for the company too.
Would you argue though that technology's there, but now we start to get into the privacy issue? So for instance, if something was constantly monitoring the dopamine, cortisol, and serotonin levels of my brain, it would know, oh, we've just shown images that raise the adrenaline a little too much. Now we're going to show images. Here's images that increase serotonin, dopamine, cortisol, adrenaline. So you can, if I were to give up all my brain and genetic data to AI for a year, probably amazing things could be done with current algorithms. But then you start to get into this issue, like, how much am I really willing to give up to software?
Right. We are already giving up approximations of that, right? Because your serotonin levels are approximated by your clicks and your activity on an app. So we're beginning to give that up. So I think the two questions are, can companies use that for good versus for profit? And that's the question I was raising on whether it can measure our long-term improvements rather than our short-term instant gratification. The other question is, well, how do we protect that privacy data? There are technologies being proposed, such as federated learning and others, that says, okay, I will keep your data on your home server or in your hospital if it's medical data, or on your cell phone even, and never let it leave. But please let me learn from it so we can aggregate and make smarter models so that it doesn't know about you individually, but yet at the same time, we have our cake and eat it too and use your data to improve the overall model. There are algorithms being devised for that, and that might be a way to at least partially solve the problem or reduce the concerns.
So it's very interesting because I remember earlier I said there's three components of this concept called well-being defined by the study of positive psychology. And one's community, one's mastery. The third that I finally remember is freedom. And at what point, in terms of good intentions, this should free us. So instead of me searching the phone book about what the best car mechanic is, I could just ask Google, get me the best car mechanic. And in fact, send someone over to pick up my car and take it there and fix it and done. So that gives me freedom of time and which is a luxury that used to be very expensive. Now it's getting cheaper and cheaper. Time and solitude and so on. But at some point, it's like you say, and you have this balance throughout the book. I would argue the book is almost about this balance of when are we free because of the AI or when are we a slave to the AI? Because, you know, from the first story to the last, we have to take into account what are the AI's real intentions? Are they commercial? Are they good? Were they trained on the sophisticated training set? Were the creators of the AI interested in training on an interesting set? And so it's going to be an interesting back and forth, I think, to figure that out.
Yes, and I think that's a great summary of the book. And it's really a call to action for AI scientists and engineers to really understand the potential dangers of AI are not AI gaining self-consciousness, but rather either people with bad intentions programming AI in the wrong way, or people not being familiar with the nuances that could have externalities and impact. And once I think the AI scientists are aware these are issues, there should and will be more energy and time being put into developing solutions that protect our privacy, like federated learning, and developing products and solutions and detectors that will tell the AI scientists, hey, look, you think you're benefiting the user, but actually these are the long-term potential dangers. Have you considered using these other ways to reduce the danger? So it's just like when we learned programming, you know, we were told, you know, don't use go-to statements and use the compiler when it gives you a warning. Heed the warning because it could overflow your memory. So these are sort of the AI compiler that we now need to build to ensure that the engineers are aware of the potential dangers and hopefully get better and better at fixing it.
Well, Kai-Fu Lee, co-author of AI 2041, and also the earlier book, AI Superpowers. You were on the podcast for that. Such a great idea to write 10 beautiful science fiction short stories about near future potential of AI, the dangers, the stories, the characters. The characters were really brought to life. Your co-author was excellent. Do you think any of these will be option for movies? I could see movies out of many of these.
Yes, we are beginning to talk to Hollywood.
Look at you going all full circle, all the way from Carnegie Mellon Technology to Apple, Microsoft, Google, China, and now back to Hollywood to make your first movies, probably powered by AI directors and actors. A lot of actors are worried that eventually they're going to be replaced and people say, oh, no, that will never happen. But it's going to happen eventually.
Yes, it will replace the average actor who doesn't have any exciting deep skills. So we come back to the same problem again. How do you become a brilliant actor without first learning to enter the space?
You know, which leads to an interesting question, which is, you know, there's this cognitive bias, Dunning-Kruger bias. Everybody tends to think, for instance, they're a better driver than they are. Everyone tends to think they're smarter than they are. What if AI now really tells you, no, these are the talented people. You're actually kind of mediocre. That's going to be very frightening to a lot of people.
Oh, that will lead to instant dystopia. We better not do that. I think we better keep letting people think they are, if they keep working hard, they will become better in some area in which they'll actually get better. That would be the best outcome, because I believe everyone's good at something. But in order to get to that state, AI may have to mislead and sugarcoat and tell white lies to basically coax people along so that they can get to that state.
When will AI reach the point that it goes beyond the basic, this is good, this is bad, and sort of takes a meta view that we have to coax goodness out of something?
I still think the humans will have to do that for the next 20 years. And
yeah, that's a hard one.
Yeah, that is a hard one. That's why I wrote the stories. So it's for people who are thoughtful and excited. Hey, this is programming the new AI to improve the huge future of humanity. That's a great aspiration for hopefully one or two readers of this book.
Well, again, it was a very inspiring book. Really beautiful. I encourage people to buy this as soon as it comes out. Thanks once again, Kai-Fu, for coming on the podcast. And when one of these becomes a movie, I hope you come on again and tell us about that process as well.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.